Welcome to episode number 28 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about the pineal gland, getting hot, and the ear. Let's be real. Pretty much, like, in med school, that you're not an interesting person. Unless someone's interested in hearing about med school, you don't have a lot of interesting things to say.
It so happens that everyone that listens to this podcast is interested in med school, which means perfect. Exceptionally interesting.
It's exceptionally interesting. Okay, so we're going to start with the pineal gland today. Do you know what the pineal gland is? Have you heard of this?
No.
Okay. It's this little itty-bitty guy. It's only like 6 to 10 millimeters long, and it's in the midline of the brain.
Okay? Oh, okay.
It's connected to the brain by a stalk, but it doesn't have any direct nerve connections. The pineal gland has two cell types, pineolocytes.
Wait, tell me first what it does.
That's what I'm getting into.
Oh, okay. Pineolocytes.
Pineolocytes, which are two, they have like kind of a process that reaches out, like a little finger that reaches out from these cells that have a little bit of a bulbous expansion. They have tons of mitochondria. They also have glial-like interstitial cells, so these extra cells that are kind of like the cells that you see in your brain.
Okay.
That are there just for support.
Okay.
So they provide structural support. The as far as what they do.
Yes, this is what I'm important.
Yeah, this is more what you're interested in.
Yeah, I don't care about the cell type. Sorry, man.
It handles circadian rhythm.
Okay.
You know your circadian rhythm?
Yeah, isn't it the thing that tells me to be awake when I'm awake and go to sleep when I'm supposed to be asleep?
This is what secretes melatonin.
Oh.
This is where your melatonin comes from. Melatonin is something I feel like
not
we know
your
a
melanin.
Lot about. No, not your melanin.
Your melatonin.
Melatonin. It's melatonin, so that's highest at night, right?
Sure.
And the decline...
Which is why you go to bed at 8:30.
Yeah, right? The decline in melatonin synthesis comes from exposure to light or beta-adrenergic... I can never say that word.
I've never heard you try it before.
Adrenergic blocking agents. Basically, it induces sleepiness.
Okay.
So, like, melatonin, and I know you know this, but it's a really popular... supplement to take for people who work overnights.
Yeah, you would used to take that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about all the time because I always felt like it gave me nightmares, which is not like a known side effect or anything, but I feel like when I took melatonin, I often had these really crazy, bothersome dreams.
Oh.
But that is not scientifically proven. One of the things that I think is really cool about the pineal gland is that there are some very, it's called corpora arenacea or brain sand.
Brain sand. I like that.
Yeah. It has these defined areas inside of the pineal gland that, the stuff is calcified and it actually looks like little pieces of sand inside of there. And it starts early in childhood, and these pineolocytes that like secrete this extracellular matrix, like the stuff around the cells that have calcium phosphate crystals in it. And you know what those are important for?
I don't know. Falling asleep, Sandman.
Yeah, we have no idea what they do. But they're actually important for. It helps us find the pineal gland on radiography.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is helpful.
Yeah, but that's not, like, their function, you know. What we use them for.
How does the pineal gland know if it's daytime or nighttime?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
It could be something related to, like, vitamin D. It could be, you know, something UV, you know, it could be things like that. I don't actually know the answer to it though.
Because I think that, you know, something that they say is that people aren't producing as much melatonin because there's so much artificial light in the world.
Sure. Yeah.
Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com.
It's hot.
I know.
It's hot, like, all the time.
We are a cool-weathered people.
Yeah. You know, I this might sound gross, because it is gross. I'm honestly not very good about taking showers here.
But isn't it hot? Isn't, like, a shower, like, refreshing and delightful?
Yeah, but then, like, I get out, I'm all clean, and 10 minutes later, I'm covered in sweat again. Like, I never really fully feel clean here, because I'm always sweating.
Yeah, I think you started sweating when you got off the plane in January.
Yeah.
And have not stopped since.
It's not, no. Actually, there has been a couple of nights that it's not even cool in the house, just only if we're, like, we were sitting on the veranda. I can think of a couple of times that it's been cool because of the breeze off of the ocean. But that was pretty rare. Like, usually even at night, I'm sitting outside in shorts and a tank top.
Yeah. It gets hot. And so are there any things that you do to try to make sure you don't get overheated? Because, yeah, you could, like, dehydrate. And
yep.
I'm sure there's all sorts of science-y things that are bad.
Oh, yeah. So I do. I know I brought this up on the podcast before, but I do keep plenty of water with. I even... Mm-hmm. You know, I know it was leftover from hiking or going to the beach or something, but I still keep a jug of water in the car.
Yep.
That's just been handy for the random run, you know.
You get anxious if you don't know where your next water's coming from.
No.
Yes.
Only I do get concerned if I feel like we're out of water or low on water and we're in the middle of, like, a hike or something like that. If we're, like, walking around town and I don't have a water bottle with me, like, that doesn't make me nervous.
Well, yeah, because then you know where you can get it.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't know where your next water's coming from, you kind of, like, get very apprehensious.
Apprehensious?
Yes.
I don't think I get as bad as you say I do, but okay. I also don't think it's a bad idea to always know, you know, where your water is. Like that time we went up to the volcano, I sweat through my shirt and through the backpack I was carrying.
Mm-hmm.
Like that whole thing was wet and, you know, I was tired and my legs were weak and yeah, it did make me like, all right. We're out of water. This is not a great situation. I feel like that's reasonable.
That's fair.
Or the time we went camping with Wes and Roy.
Oh, Lord.
And it was like over 100 degrees, and it was so hot that the dog laid down in the middle of the trail and didn't want to move.
Yeah.
And Wes slipped and spilled a gallon of water. Yeah, that was concerning to me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is also reasonable.
I've got a little list of things that are kind of ways to beat the heat in St. Vincent.
All right, let's hear it. Right. One, know where your water is.
Know where your water is. Two, and like some of these things are super dumb because like I'm from a world where I know when the next time I can cool down is, but like, man, when I was in St. Vincent, I didn't always know when the next time I'd be cool again was. You
yeah.
Know? Stand in the shade as often as possible. It's super stupid.
That's your advice to not get hot? You spent too much time in St. Vincent. Lod.
No, but I would notice that I was, like, walking around doing errands in town, And I'd be like, this side of the sidewalk is completely empty. There's no people here. Doop-a-doop. And then realize, oh, wait. But it's because, like, it's completely in the sun. The part of the street that's got, like, an overhang on it
is
off.
Because they're in the shade. And we're in the tropics.
You suck. Next up. This is part of the reason why I think that sometimes people in St. Vincent have a difficult time organizing, is people here like to move slow.
Uh-huh.
Then you talk.
What? I didn't even make fun of you yet. Oh, hey, I forgot. I'm writing 8 tips on to how to be healthy. Number one, I'm going to put breathing. What do you think?
You suck. Well, lastly, eat spicy food.
How does that help you beat the heat?
Because you sweat when you eat spicy food, and sweating will make you cool.
Is this a fact?
Yes.
Like
yes, it is. Think about all of the hottest places in the world.
Uh huh.
It's a fact. Like, anecdotes can be facts.
So this is anecdotal evidence.
Well,
all right, just want to make sure I understand.
Think about all of the hot places in the world and how much spicy food they eat.
Damn it, you got a good point.
Right?
And think of all like the not spicy food.
Yeah.
Like lutefisk.
Right? And like shepherd's pie. Yes. And I don't know.
Huh.
Yeah.
There is definitely some sort of correlation there.
You sound surprised.
I am surprised.
Yeah. No, that all of the spiciest foods come from the closest to the equator. And I really do believe that you know, and there, I actually did look this up, that there is some, you know, that you know, scientists talk about this from time to time. And
at like dinner parties.
but that there is kind of a consensus that since spicy food, the capsaicin in the spicy food makes you sweat, that it will help lower your body temperature, and that's probably why people have historically made it happen that way.
Huh. I feel like I eat spicy food and I get hot. But I will have to pay more attention to that.
But what they did find, that you feel hot, but your body temperature does not change.
Really?
Yeah. I did look that part up, that they said that was true.
I mean, that's like we were talking about taste sensation with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Or with spicy, how it's just pain, but it doesn't actually do any damage. I suppose it's that same sort of concept, that it's sending the signals, but it's not actually doing anything.
Right.
You know?
So, yeah, eat some spicy food. Chill out.
Wow.
Our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com, and every little bit helps. Thanks.
So there's the external ear, the middle ear, and the inner ear.
Yes.
And so I thought we would spend one section on each of those.
Are we going to start outside in or inside out?
I was thinking outside in.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think that if you said that you're going to start outside in, then that means those are the notes you've got in front of you.
That's fair. All right, so we're going to start with the external ear. It's basically separated everything from your eardrum out. External. So it's your external ear, external from the eardrum, right?
Okay.
Okay. The job of this is to focus sound waves into your ear canal. So that's like even your pinna, your auricle, the part that's on the outside, that the floppy part that you can play with,
mm-hmm.
That's job is to focus all those sound waves into your canal to hit your eardrum.
Sure.
Okay. And you know how the hangy down part, how some are floppy?
Your lobe?
Yeah, the lobe. You know how on some people that's floppy and some people it's not? You know what that is?
Genetics. I remember this from high school.
True. It actually has no bit of difference whatsoever.
But yeah, that it's some specific genetic marker of having an attached or detached
envelope. Yeah. All this comes from the first pharyngeal pouch. You remember I was talking about pharyngeal arches and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
I do.
Okay. So it all comes in the first pharyngeal pouch. And so we talked mostly about arches. But in between each arch is also a pouch.
Okay.
And those pouches, as a fetus, those pouches give rise to basically different openings or spaces in the body. And the first pharyngeal pouch gives rise to the external ear.
Would that also be your eye holes?
Your what?
Your eye holes?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, that comes from, I don't remember.
That's okay.
No. And I don't remember, and yet surprisingly, my embryo score helped my test, not hurt my test. Yeah. Okay, so the part that we play with, we call that the auricle. That's the outside part. It's all cartilage, directs sounds into this hole. That hole is called the external auditory meatus. And we actually have four muscles that control the movement of the auricle.
Really?
Yeah. Which is, you know, like an animal. Like, animals have these. But the thing is, ours are underdeveloped, so we can't move them around like most people can. We spent a really long time trying to move our, flex our auricle muscles, and we just couldn't get them to go. You're trying really hard right now. I feel like anybody listening to this is also trying right now.
You have to.
Yeah. So they're underdeveloped, so we can't do all the cool stuff, but it's actually set
like
up
dogs.
Almost, yeah.
Like,
but
dogs are so expressive with their ears.
Right, especially our dog, Kalis. The sensory innervation is kind of wild, too, as far as, like, the skin sensation, not sensory, like, hearing, but the skin sensation for all that area, comes from cranial nerve 5.
Okay.
7.
And 9.
10.
Okay.
And cervical nerves from C2, like from the spinal level, C2 and C3 as well. All to be able to feel different parts of your ear.
Oh.
That's a lot of
different... Yeah, your ear's very sensitive.
Yeah. The external auditory meatus, that the actual inside of the hole, is lined by stratified squamous. Do you remember what stratified squamous is?
A type of cells.
Do you remember what? Like, can you tell me what stratified squamous is?
That they're kind of like flat.
Yep.
On each other.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. That's sensory, because you can actually feel on the inside of your ear. That's the third branch of CN5 of the trigeminal, third trigeminal branch, and CN10. So that has its own set of innervation as well. And then inside the canal, you have a bunch of sweat glands.
Really?
Yeah, but they're modified sweat glands. They're called ceremonious glands, and they secrete
earwax.
Earwax, yeah. And it's mostly just in the outer one third that they actually exist. But yeah, that's what's your earwax is actually kind of a form of sweat in a way.
Yuck! What's the earwax purpose?
So it keeps the eardrum like pliable. Like, it keeps it moist inside of there. That helps keep the canal clean. It's waxy in nature, so it helps to waterproof inside of there, just to help water get out and doesn't just, like, sit in there. It also has some immune function as far as, like, killing bacteria. It also provides, like, a foreign particle barrier, so things that aren't supposed to be in there, it's a little bit harder for them to creep in. The earwax itself is actually a combination of sebum and dead skin cells.
Okay.
So your earwax is actually a part of you.
Yes.
So that's kind of the external ear.
I hear you.
You always have to say something. Have you ever noticed that at the end of every topic, you try and throw like one last one liner in like that? Have you noticed this? You know it's true, so you can't answer now.
episode 28, where we talked about the pineal gland, what to do to stay cool in the tropics, as well as the outer ear. Catch us next time for episode 29. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.